So I've assembled you guys tonight to actually talk about something that's, I don't know, it seems serious. It kind of hit me. We'll just say that. I feel it. So over the Thanksgiving holiday, and you guys know this. You guys know my anxiety's been kind of like peaking. I've been like, you know, kind of grinding. So I've been in a certain kind of headspace, you know. So, you know, over the holiday, I do some acid, drop some acid, did some DMT, and I really like, I reassessed my whole opinion about shit. And then after a day and a half of that, I finally fell asleep. And while I was asleep, you're never going to believe this shit. This is a true story. I had a dream, and I didn't want to, like, I don't want to point anybody out, so we're going to have to, like, bleep the names out, but just for you guys, you'll know that I was visited by the masculine, like, the male manifestation of...
So you were visited by Bill and Ted from their excellent adventure.
Correct. And I felt immediately sort of comforted because I felt their aura, their cool aura and stuff. And they pulled me over and they said, Rob, we want to impart to you the parable of the potential pointless pit near Pea Patch Village.
Alliteration.
I didn't realize it at the time. Until I wrote it down, I'm like, okay. So it's a parable about the potential pointless pit near Pea Patch Village. What are we talking about here? And they said, once upon a time, there was a sort of a social phenomenon about holes, digging huge, huge holes. And nobody really knew why you should do it. But you had to dig these huge, enormous pits. And everybody was doing it. It was almost like a religious sort of experience. And some people said that you could burn all of your trash and your refuse. So it was like a green thing. And some people said that it was more like a religious thing. And some people said it would be like tourism. And people would come to see who had the best and the most well-manicured hole, huge hole. But it was never really clear why we were going to dig these huge holes. But what was important was we had to dig the hole. Because the people who dug the hole wanted to dig it. It was very important for them to dig it. And over time, we realized that like it didn't really make a lot of sense to dig it. But they said that the fact of doing it would be a boon to the place, to the village near Pea Patch. And people were like really confused about it. They didn't like it really, because it seemed weird to them. But you know, they were trying to be convinced that they should dig this hole. And some people stood up and said we shouldn't dig it. Some people even tried to stop from digging it because they didn't know. They said the whole town could fall in the hole. We don't know. We've never really done this kind of stuff. It's all brand new, you know. And so they dig the hole. And the people who were in charge of the people who were in charge of hiring the people to dig the hole, it was like six people. They made tons of money. Tons of money. You can't even imagine how much. It was almost like the hole was like a gold mine, almost. But after they made all that money, they said, well, now we have to take care of the hole. We have to watch out for it and mow the grass and maybe do security around the hole. But what they did was all they did was they went and found people from the outside to do, like, to just contract to watch the hole. It wasn't, you know, it's just like, it was kind of boring. We thought there was going to be like a big, this was going to be a big thing, and that there would be big events there, and it would be almost like a carnival. But it wound up being like two security guards and a cleaner and somebody to mow the grass. And then we built this hole. Well, come to find out, the hole ruined the foundation of the entire village there near Peat Patch. It was a pointless pit, you see. And, you know, people said, we got to dig that hole because we dig holes. That's what we do. But sometimes you can just step back and be like, maybe we shouldn't dig that hole. I don't know. Yeah. So therein lies the issue, and maybe you guys can figure it out, or
maybe you can figure it out.
Maybe you can't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. From the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast, I'm Rob, this is the Highlands Bunker Podcast, hello. Today, we're really proving our dedication to all of you. Carl and Bill are here, hello, thank you for coming once again. I sort of alluded to the fact that I almost burnt the studio down about a week ago. That happened. That unlike... just like the dream I just had happened. So we're still in a time of transition here in the studio. I didn't want to talk a lot about it because I don't want to like bring you, I don't want to break the fourth wall or whatever it is. But we will at the end of this have a way that you can help us. And the way is going to have to do with merch. You guys love merch? So we're going to talk about that merch. Merchandise. The merchandise that this place will... See, now, here's the thing. I've committed to not... For this project to not be a vehicle for advertisement, for merchandise. I don't want that. However, we can get around that.
I think this provides an opportunity for an exception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this? What do you think about for a donation to support independent media at the Delaware Call? We send to you a special edition No Cap t-shirt, Neighbors Organized for Credibility and Accountability in Policing. These are beautiful shirts.
Beautiful baby blue.
Carolina blue. No Cap logo on it. Everybody who volunteers and works for No Cap already has one. That's a little thing you can do. But to support it, you can donate and get one for yourself, $50. So, you got to send an email to highlandsbunker@gmail.com. We will tell you exactly what to do. It's going to be a donation to Delaware Call. We'll get your information, and we'll send you a No Cap t-shirt. Now, I think it's important to mention, when we say t-shirt, people think like, it's just...
Some gilding...
Some it's like threadbare, you can see through it, some garbage t-shirt. Now, I understand why people would say that, actually.
Yeah.
Bill, you have one of these. You own one of these t-shirts.
I do. I wear them often with my UNC powder blue mesh shorts that go below my knees.
Yeah, and, you have to do that.
It looks great.
I call it pulling my Fetterman. That's what I call it.
There you go.
These t-shirts are serious. They're 6.1 ounce U.S. cotton. These garments are made in the United States. These garments were hand-screened by a screener right here in the United States who also is a member of a union. Not a screener's union, though, another kind of union. He does this on the side. I want to be totally clear about that. But these are real fucking dope t-shirts. These are not some fucking bullshit. So hit us up at highlandsbunker@gmail.com. We will let you know how we can ship you some very dope t-shirts. They're going to be $50 a piece. Your donation is going to go directly to independent media and journalism at the Delaware Call to support all of the investigative reporting that's happening. And so I think it's a great deal. It's a great deal.
Now, Robert, these are one size fits all.
These are not one size fits all. As a matter of fact, they're cut a little bit tight.
Yeah.
They kind of open up. They work themselves in, but they're a little bit tight. So if you normally wear a medium, you probably want a large.
Size up.
Size one size up. But here's the thing. We got all those sizes. Mm-hmm. If you normally wear a 2X, you're a big guy. We need big guys.
The gentleman you just referenced, Mr. Fetterman.
Big guy. We don't need him, though.
No, we don't.
Fuck that guy. You know what? Fuck that guy. But we have all that. We have 3X. We got 4X for the big guys. So, you know, we have that. And we'll be sending you a quality t-shirt that you can wear and support everything we're doing. And people will be like, what's Neighbors Organized for Credibility and Accountability in Policing? And we'll be like, let me tell you. And then you'll have a story to tell. So that's something we're doing, and I wanted to kick off with that.
Merch.
Merchandise. It's short for merchandise. It's what I understand. That's what Carl was telling me. Is that true?
That's true.
Oh, thank God.
You've got the fire culprit in here as well, sort of gloating over all of us. You maintain that it's still safe to be in here at the time?
I never maintained it safe to be here at the time. I don't think I ever said that.
Okay.
I don't think I said that at all. I hope I didn't.
Play it safe.
Exactly. So we have some cool stuff lined up.
We have a great show for you tonight, folks.
No, we have a terrible show for you tonight. You should turn it off tonight. This is all going to be riffing and fun stuff. Actually, to be honest with you, we talked about like whether we should even do a show this week, and I got outvoted. I said, "Fuck you guys, let's not do one." Bill and Carl were like, "We got to do one. This is so we don't miss. We got to do it." And I was like, "I don't know about this. I didn't buy it." But so if any of you see Bill or Carl out there in the world, thank them for getting an episode this week because you didn't deserve it. We shouldn't have done it. That's that. Now, do you want to read this story about, what's it called, Crazy Eddie's or Sneaky Pete's? What's the new green grocer here?
Pretty Eddie's.
What is it?
Pretty Eddie's.
Pretty Eddie's.
I think we'll find out. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a. Speaking of mascots, we were talking about mascots. The mascot is a bell pepper, I believe.
We were talking about mascots.
About mascots earlier. There's a little inside baseball for you guys.
Literally. So I guess most mornings we'll fire off among us and a few other fine folks sort of like some bullshit that we see and take a screenshot of. And it's like, oh, if I can get four or five of my friends to chuckle at it, you know, morning's off to a great start. And I think at least three of us, not simultaneously, but we were all kind of like, all right, this showed up in our Explore feed today or whatever.
Yeah, this was, the algorithm knows how to feed us this kind of content however we get it.
Yeah, and it's a light one, and I'm going to do a little bit first. But yeah, it's a new grocery store we could probably riff on, you know, ongoing gentrification efforts in the city of Wilmington that we all call home. Remember when you drove back to downtown Newark for the first time years after graduating from the University of Delaware? Old hangouts were replaced by new, strange, gleaming storefronts. A new batch of young faces looked back at you, and there was an overall feeling that the town had moved on without you. If you haven't been on Wilmington's Market Street in several years, you'll get that same feeling. And even as a new wave of spots have opened along the Market Street corridor in recent months, including healthy foods at Wilmington Green Box, ice cream and burgers at U Dairy Creamery, and a full Caribbean-inspired menu at Bull Bay Cuisine, you've seen nothing yet. A stream of new restaurants, along with a brewery and a cidery, are plotting launches ahead of the opening of the $75 million The Residences at Midtown Park luxury apartment complex, expected to welcome tenants in the spring. It's at the site of the former Shipley Street parking garage that serviced grand theatergoers. Work has already begun to blow out the walkway in between Chelsea Tavern and U Dairy, creating a large natural path connecting the two streets, with a casual outdoor beer garden filling the space. But plenty of newbies will be sprouting on the city's main drag in the meantime. Here's a look at some of them. Every time Wilmington developers Buccini Pollen Group poll the 4,000 residents living in their city apartment and condominium buildings, they hear the same thing. A neighborhood grocery store is needed downtown. Oh, this is also the Delaware News Journal.
Can we talk about your first part, or talk about that? Yeah, I didn't know whether to interject or not, because you said you wanted to give a little intro.
Yeah.
So you give the intro, and I started counting on the doing my mental sort of calculation. I'm like, the UD Creamery is no longer there.
No.
And what was the other one?
Bull Bay,
no longer there.
And then they go on to feature a restaurant, actually, that my wife and I did eat at once, not to brag, but with noted baseball writer Keith Law. The newest addition to Market Street is slated to come as early as next month in the form of something the city doesn't have, a full-service French restaurant, Margot, a restaurant and bar with its own on-site bakery and crêperie, is scheduled to open at 902 North Market.
By the way, I was there. I ate there, too.
Yeah.
Also not there anymore.
Not that great.
It wasn't that great, no.
No. It was very expensive.
But again, in case people can't, like, grasp what Bill is saying.
Reading the news.
All that. Look, if it's got views, it's the news. And all of that news that everybody thought was really, like, fun on, like, the Wilmington Reddit stuff, that's all gone. It's all gone.
But what about this?
So it's all bullshit.
A few steps down the street, though, you'll find another anticipated business. And this one is for the beer nerds. Stitch House Brewery is about to be only the second downtown Wilmington brewery to produce its own beer in more than six decades when it opens this fall, aiming for a November debut.
Stitch House Brewery, I think Carl's going to have to do the Chopin Death March. Dun, 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 dun. Also dead.
The Italian restaurant Arde Osteria at 7th and North Market, which shares the same owners as Market Street's DeMeo's Pizza, great pizza place.
DeMeo's is good. Oh, here's the thing.
Should be open by the new year, according to Sarah Lamb, Director of Design and Marketing for developers Buccini Pollen Group.
So what year was that? Can you tell us what year that was written, all that?
That was 2017.
2017.
Feels like yesterday, though.
It does feel like yesterday.
All right. So
now let's the reason Bill mentioned that is because
no reason.
sort of like that weird dream I had. There's actually no reason. If you can't figure it out, go fuck yourself. Now today we see this other thing.
Over the past 6.5 years, a small team was tasked with fixing the problem, and that problem here is, I guess, no grocery store.
Yeah, so Buccini Pollen has been getting. I assume that the doormen at every building are handing out surveys.
I thought you were going to say accepting Uber Eats orders.
Well, that too.
Yeah,
but they're like, hey, what do you need here in these four blocks that we've redeveloped in Wilmington? And they're like, you know what, I really need like a grocery store.
Yeah,
which again. Fair enough, but this is how Buccini Pollen Group in Wilmington translate the need for a grocery store downtown to to this?
Let's make the largest barrier to entry possible. Okay, yeah, they're going to open a corner grocer in the heart of Delaware's biggest city at North Market and 8th Streets. The result is the dainty pink and sky blue Pretty Eddie's at 730 North Market, which officially opens December 11th, offering everything from everyday groceries and grab-and-go sandwiches slash salads to fresh fruits slash produce and even hot rotisserie chicken. Dom's Kitchen in Philadelphia will provide sides and soup, and Wilmington's own The Bloom Wagon will even be selling fresh-cut flowers. You'll feel like you're walking into a Trader Joe's. We're going to have a tight-knit staff. Some are going to come from our other entities, like Wilma's and Maker's Alley, said Sarah Lamb, Senior Vice President of Design, Marketing, and Community
Engagement. At least we know Sarah Lamb's still there. Sarah Lamb, from 2017 all the way to 2025, your 401k must look really, really sweet. Sarah Lamb, God bless your fucking retirement account.
So customers will see a lot of familiar faces. Pretty Eddie's is located at the former home of 9th Street Bookshop. The last former home of the bookshop.
Yes, and Jack and Gemma, fucking peace be upon them. They're not even, you know, I just love them to death. And I know they're looking upon this from their perch and thinking this is very funny, as we think it's very funny.
It closed the year after the article I started this bit off with.
Correct.
And it's been vacant ever since. So that's 7 years. You've got the middle of your gentrification playground just kind of sitting empty next to an empty dry cleaner. It sits within a block of the Grand to its north and Bardea Food and Drink to its south. During a sneak peek tour at the end of November, the shelves were still bare. But they will be filled by the time the doors swing open, offering a world of products that downtown residents used to have to travel to get, whether to Acme in Trolley Square, ShopRite at Christina Landing, or the Fresh Grocer at Adams Plaza in West Center City.
Anything north of 14th Street? Oh, I guess not. Actually, there's nothing north of, well, technically Trolley is north of it, but there's nothing, anything north of Rodney Square? No. Fuck those people.
Yeah.
They don't pay BPG rents. Sorry.
Pretty Eddie's will carry everything from pantry staples, frozen goods, and deli meats slash cheeses to freshly baked bread and treats to local products and gifts. Also, specialty items and boutique brands from area vendors, including the Wilmington Kitchen Collective and Westchester-based Artisan Exchange, sounds like a bank, and Golden Valley Farms Coffee Roasters. The rotisserie chickens will be their signature item, complete with a pretty chicken club and punch card, and that gets you a free chicken after purchasing 10 of them. This is a fun detail. Melissa Kenny, Executive Vice President of the Kenny Family ShopRites, was an advisor on the project. Puccini Pollen Group has partnered with ShopRite to help stock fresh produce and other items while tapping into their merchandising expertise.
So it's a boutique ShopRite that BPG can run at a loss so that... I'm going to stop. Go ahead.
The store will open at 10:30, 7 days a week. It'll close at 7:30, Monday through Saturday, and 5:30 on Sundays. Store officials had originally planned for the store to be cashless, but will now accept cash after realizing Delaware law mandates cash be accepted.
Oh, that wasn't there
this
morning.
This was not there this morning.
I was going to do it.
Can you guys? So this is a. You're going to have to play like a woo. We have an update. We have a big update. Wow. This is a thing.
Well, the press release.
Eric Morrison and Sophie Phillips getting it done.
Did they really?
Yeah. Well, they were because Cheyenne made a post this morning because she was walking around downtown and was like, wow, it might be, like, this sucks. It might be illegal, because I think she had, like, a vague memory of this bill passing. And then, yeah, Eric Morrison's in the comments being like, this is completely illegal,
incredible.
And here's a link to the section of the code. And Sophie did that, too, and shared it. And then Jack Walsh is even in there being like, yeah, sponsored this legislation.
That's awesome.
I can't do this.
God. So ham-fisted.
That's awesome.
Well, that's great. So the story was updated. Excellent journalism. And it will not be cashless. The hours will eventually expand and include breakfast service after the staff successfully launched the grocery store, says Jamie Camiso, who will be overseeing Pretty Eddie's operations for BPG. Instacart could come in a few months, too. A 10-stool lunch counter will allow for in-store dining tables, and chairs will also be on the front patio on North Market Street during warm weather months.
Couldn't motherfuckers get Instacart from ShopRite as it is? It's right there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, no, no. You're fine.
God damn it.
This story is ripe for interruptions. The grocery store has a mascot. Now, this is what Carl was saying earlier. Named Pretty Eddie, a mustachioed bell pepper, along with a crew of friends who adorn their marketing materials in tote bags. There's Rudy the Radish, AJ the Chili Pepper, Millie the Milk Carton, Pat the Stick of Butter, and more.
Here, again, I'm sorry to do this again, but this is blatant, blatant ripoff of Mr. Celery.
Yeah.
We have Mr. Celery, so now we have like a Mr. Pepper and a Mr. Stick of Butter. We're not falling for this. There's one Mr. Celery. That's it. We're not falling for some other fucking bullshit. And I think as you guys, as huge Blue Rocks supporters and fans, should be behind this. This is what this is. They are trying to rip off the concept of Mr. Celery.
Yeah, but what if Mr. Celery lived in a Richard Scarry-esque busy town? Don't you think that would be fun?
That would actually be very fun.
There's actually kind of like maybe a rare miss for BPG here, because they have some artwork featured of Pretty Eddie, the namesake of this grocería. And he's driving like a smart car, which just feels very like second Obama term coded. Like he should be driving a Buxton-esque pickup truck.
Of course.
That costs $72,000.
Even if like, hey, he's driving a big pickup, but it's a hybrid. It's a hybrid pickup.
Exactly.
You know, something like that. That's what they got.
Anyway, I mean, it's a kind of a cute painting, I guess. It's all part of the branding strategy behind Pretty Eddie's, created by Philadelphia-based Kylie Creative, which is behind the shop's name, characters, and overall aesthetic. They did the branding and interiors for the nearby Gerard Craft and Cork. Catherine Anderson, design project manager for BPG, even drew their mascot on a series of car paintings bought at auction, showing off Pretty Eddie's love of fast cars with the pepper behind the wheel.
I'm sorry, sometimes you read that stuff, I'm just like, a pepper behind the wheel.
This is like when you're seven, you do your own newspaper for your parents.
You fold the paper, you're like, see how I folded it? It's like the newspaper, and it's just like one piece of paper folded up.
While Buccini Pollen Group developed the shop right near the riverfront in 2008, Pretty Eddie's will be the first grocery store that they own and operate. It was definitely outside of our comfort zone, Lamb said. We learned a lot. The market's offerings were shaped by feedback from their residents to meet their wants, and will change as new requests come in. We want to make sure we fill whatever holes people see.
To be fair, that makes a lot of sense for the entire vibe of this place.
Yeah. As long as you can get there before 5:30 or 7:30 after work, or after, you know, Sunday services or whatever. And those hours will absolutely not expand. They will contract. No, I would bet Sarah's 401k on that. After all, Pretty Eddie's was not created as a moneymaker. It was primarily built to service the growing number of residents at Buccini Pollen Group's city properties, including the residences at Midtown Park, The
One,
Standard,
Two,
The Press,
Three,
Humble Park Place,
Four,
101 DuPont Place,
Five,
Sounds Made Up, Crosby Hill,
Six,
The Cooper,
Seven,
and more.
8, 9, 10?
Literally, we're happy if we break even, Lamb said. It's part of the ecosystem that the developer has been building in the city over the past two decades to make it more livable and attractive to potential residents as they continue to build out the city.
Carl. It's an ecosystem. How do you feel about what the BPG ecosystem, the ecosystem? How do you feel about it?
I'm glad they used that word.
Because you know I'm going to go right to you when this is done to sort of give us the full, like, the real sort of rundown. So, okay, continue. Because all I can think of is Carl's going to have so much fun with this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, ecosystem, blah, blah, blah. That they've been building over the past two decades to make it more livable and attractive to potential residents as they continue to build out the city, including the in-progress 164-unit luxury apartment building at Justison Landing on the riverfront. There will be a community bulletin board to post events and services. Pretty Eddie's will also host an in-store food drive benefiting the West End Neighborhood House as part of a Buccini Pollen Group company-wide holiday donation initiative.
Paul Calistro, we see you.
And not any sort of, you know, like a court-mandated settlement agreement or anything. And what's with the name Pretty Eddie's? It's a play on those old-school corner establishment that had some guy's name and their nickname, Lamb said. We took some old names from some old businesses around here and played around with them. A ribbon cutting ceremony is scheduled for 3 p.m. on December 10th.
That will be after this episode's release. So if you want to show up.
Yeah. Meet us there.
That's, what, 8th and Market?
Yeah. I used to buy all my books there. I just want to hand it over to Carl because obviously it's very funny, but there's a lesson to be learned here. And I think Carl, as a historian of Wilmington, as a historian of working class Wilmington, and as a current organizer of working class people in Wilmington, can explain in a clear way what's happening here. And so, please.
Yeah. I mean, this is a great throwback because I feel like this podcast started with making fun of Buccini pollen eateries. If you go back to some of our earliest episodes, I believe our first bonus episode was the two of us, Margaret and Chris Johnson, talking about the various eateries across the city that we enjoyed.
Incredible.
I'm sure you mentioned DeMeo's in that one.
Probably.
I think.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know what there is to even say about it. It's just so... You could have taken that a first article and then went to ChatGPT and say, what are they going to be up to in 5 years or like 6 years or whatever, and they would have just generated this. I mean, it goes back to this idea that the state of Delaware completely failed Wilmington after the 1968 riots. Like, the 1968 riots, in my opinion, were not the beginning of Wilmington's downfall, but just like a show of its decline that only continued after that. And I think by the 1980s, you know, you get the, you can read Jordan Howell's old article about what they did with the East Side. And by that, for decades, it was just a parking lot. And then the 1980s, they start to fill it up with like the Chase building, all the government buildings, all that stuff. And yet things are not getting better. In fact, they're actually getting worse. And I think after that, they basically decided on the strategy that began with like the riverfront and now has been taking over Market Street and a bit of downtown and is spreading out from there over the last like 10 to 15 years, which is just, they're doing a green zone for Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we've had this conversation before.
Yeah, something like this.
That the goal is not to fix the city, it's to create a city within four walls, as those signs downtown
right.
like to say. That
grimly stated.
Insane.
Yeah, yeah. This is something that you guys, it was a private conversation, but I'm sure you won't mind me saying this. This is something that Kalmbach said was going to happen like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think he's the one who pointed those signs out to me.
I think he's the one who mentioned like, look at those signs, look what they look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why you see this, what has become a big fight that we've talked about in the past at the Sam Church of Friendship House.
Yeah.
And at Creative Vision Factory that got shut down like 2 years ago or something now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
Because Shipley Street is one out from
Market.
And now
they're working their way out.
Like, you got a couple of BCG buildings there now.
You know? It's only rings west, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Well, yeah, because there's
one block west.
As Eugene Young said, actually, in the Jordan Howell piece, there's an invisible wall.
On French Street,
and yeah. All of Wilmington's facing, it has its back towards the east side. But they'll get there too. They're redoing that, the Bayard School. What is the name of that school? I always forget, on Lombard Street. But yeah, they're redoing that school. So like they're going to get in there eventually. Don't worry.
They're doing something with like Riverfront East.
Well, they're doing Riverfront East too.
Yeah.
So they're going to try to completely obliterate Southbridge.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like a street between.
That's just
like
a way.
The ShopRite,
well, let me just say this. That's just a way to build an apartheid wall between Wilmington and Southbridge.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, because they have no interest in like making the city better for the people who actually live there. They want to create a walled off environment where bank employees and the creative class, because they read the fucking Richard Florida book from 30 years ago now or something. Can have their little place, and they can have their little cafes, and they have their little this or little that. And you can see it in the types of buildings that they're building, because these are, if you look at the one on the ones on Shipley Street.
Was it in the list that we counted down?
Yeah, all the different ones.
One, two, three, four. It was number five, probably.
The only one I remember is the press, because I'll like spend time at Sam, and the press is right across from Sam.
Yes.
And so I'm seeing the press sign like shining in through the back window. And, you know, it used to be a parking lot, so I get less annoyed by those sorts of things. But, you know, they shut down Creative Vision Factory. They have had this big fight over just like a bench, but even just the right of homeless people to exist on Shipley Street, basically. That's what this whole situation is with trying to ship them all out to Christina Park, is they want to expand the green zone another two blocks or so in the direction of like Orange Street. And this is one of the ways you got to like get rid of all visible signs of poverty, any sense that someone might get mugged or something, which doesn't fucking happen. Like, I spend so much time on like Shipley and Orange Street, and I've never, like, there are
so
homeless
funny,
people there,
as you're
people,
telling
but
the
there's
story,
visible poverty,
like, we were just all there
drug
this
abuse,
week. I went to a meeting there this week with again, Kirsten. We said she's the brains behind everything. She tried to say she wasn't, but that's actually true. And again, it's fine.
Look, there's homeless people there. They're
there is
nice.
Homeless people there, but that's not, like, that's just a thing.
You should try talking to them. They're pretty nice.
Yeah they're it's you. Fine. Like, it's not, but yeah, I mean, it's so clear that it is it's like this creation of a bubble and then pushing everything outside of it.
But like, their heart's only half in it. Yeah. Like, they half-ass all this stuff.
Well, it's because they're not that good at it.
And they're not that good. And I think, and to your point about like, the state of Delaware has failed the city, the amount of contempt that they have for the city as well. I've been sort of picking up on this. And
they hate it so much that they made John Carney the mayor.
Yeah.
They saddled us with him.
Yeah. Someone that's like, if you look back on like the year of John Carney thus far, I mean, you've got the homeless encampment, his homelessness task force. I don't know what the fuck else they're doing over there.
Claire DeMatteis, our friend, the biggest, maybe one of the biggest ghouls, the biggest like sort of under the radar ghouls, you know, like just somebody who gets high level appointments because they're in the Carney orbit.
Yeah, she was a party hack, and who eventually just started getting cabinet posts.
Yes, and so yeah, so you know, just the idea of making Claire DeMatteis the city sort of homelessness czar. That says all you need to
understand. Well, yeah, it's fitting that you make the DOC secretary the homeless. Like, that's,
of course.
Yeah,
you ran the prisons, now you're, yeah. you ran the prisons, so you kind of understand.
Yeah, it's all, like, bad satire.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have a shuttle service for
like
BPG,
Mercedes Sprinter vans.
Yeah. For if you live in a BPG apartment or work at a BPG building, like in the new Moores building or something, you get a private shuttle.
Yeah.
Like you're in fucking San Francisco or something.
I don't even know if they do. Like, well, maybe they do it in San Francisco in 2025. But like, it just feels like we're trying to attract people who would otherwise not like to live in a city, and trying to convince them to stay for at least a year or two.
Well, they're literally trying to attract a stereotype of a like a 2010s yuppie,
a court of chancery clerk.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing too. It's so. I had a conversation this week about like. Hey, you can contact some of these attorneys. Some of them come in and leave, and it's like, yeah, that's what it is. It's like, oh, I'm gonna be an associate at this firm for 3 years, and do this stuff, and then fucking split. So I'm just gonna live in that bubble.
Yeah, city's bad.
So I live in the bubble. Bad. I don't even know. Like, I'm not even
city wage tax.
Ha! You motherfuckers. By the way, you know what this is?
Is that a tax bill?
This is my escrow. It's my escrow letter. So we're going to be talking about this maybe for patrons only. I got my escrow letter right here, buddy. No, that's the thing. Like, they don't mind this. It's sort of similar to like banking, where you just have the H-1B visas or people moving in. This is really what the riverfront was for. Those BPG. The original BPG neighborhood, you know, down there with the apartments and stuff on Justison Street, like that was for like divorcees and people who were going to go work at banks on visas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're going to program, if you're going to model, maybe if you're going to be an attorney, this is what, and it's just an expansion of that idea. That's all it is.
Yeah, and they're trying to manufacture a culture that they see in a Philadelphia or a New York or a Baltimore or like our other mid-Atlantic big cities. And I don't think they understand that culture is not something that can be manufactured by a developer. It is something that comes up when you actually have participation of real city residents in the community doing their own stuff, and then it bubbles up from that.
Yeah, I mean,
but
not
the
for
issue
nothing.
Is that they hate Wilmington's culture.
Yeah, well, yes. that's exactly what I was going to say because
it's a black culture.
You mentioned it, and Wilmington had one of the most important cultures of Western civilization, if you want to mention that.
Yeah, it was like us,
the
and
jazz
New
culture,
Orleans.
and Chicago. Yeah, it was like a few spots created this American musical art form called jazz. One of them was here, and as Jordan Howell wrote, as you mentioned, Carl, we plowed that under to build, like, the Carvel building or whatever.
The Carvel. Joe Connor corrected me on that before.
Who gives a shit?
Lots of concrete buildings.
You know what? I'm a big fan of the IMP building. Hey, it's brutalist.
Yeah,
but
I like that.
And I like, actually, the buildings around Rodney Square. Anyway. Yeah,
the
we had
is not that. The buildings
Here's
are
what they're doing. They're trying. They're trying to manufacture a culture that they actually were the ones that genocided it. Wilmington had an incredible world famous culture that the people who were opening a BPG grocery killed. So, like, I don't even know what we're doing here.
Yeah, something I think about is, when Market Street Mall was still functioning and Market Street was closed for several blocks, I remember people sort of yearned for that today, and I'm like, it really wasn't that great. I mean,
it was okay.
A Tom Maloney special.
Yeah, I overlapped with it a bit because I was kind of working. I would, like, have summer jobs through the early 2000s, and it was very desolate. When they started rebranding the lower market portion, they would like change the name. See, this is just a great metaphor because it's like half-assed gentrification attempts. They would change the name of it every year or two. It was Loma for lower market. It was Ship's Muse. It was the Ship's Tavern District. And they kept just like, I'm sure they were just like going to the Historical Society and looking at a book and being like, let's find some old shit. We can name it that. And yeah, it's depressing. I've always thought it reminds me of like a movie set for an old Western where you've got all these buildings, you know, the facades are all there and they're like period appropriate, but it's just kind of being held up, like supported by some 2x4s in the back. There's no soul. And like, you got these businesses like Space Boy, the t-shirt shop. They move 5 or 6 times, you know, and it's like, why do you guys keep moving?
Well, you know why? I mean, my assumption, and what you said, maybe that should be the fucking title of this whole episode. There's no soul.
No. Rearranging, like, the deck chairs.
Yeah, well, and my impression, I'll say it like this. My impression is that Space Boy or these groups, even like, now God bless them, the real bookstore, Huxley and Hero and Huxley.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've moved to an even bigger place.
Yep.
Yeah, the old mandolin shop, right?
Correct.
The violin.
Yes.
Bromberg shop.
Oh, Bromberg.
The
beautiful,
Bromberg.
Beautiful building.
I spent a lot
of
time there growing up for obviously.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, the Bromberg. Yeah, I guess your parents were probably friends of Bromberg's. Yeah.
Would they do like jam sessions?
I don't think they got that far, but.
But they, like, yeah. You know what? I'm just realizing this.
Mm-hmm.
Shoo. We're going to have to talk about this. But anyway, yeah, so I'm glad that they moved, but all of that moving is just about like, hey, BPG can give you a better break up here, or you can move over here.
And I think in their case also, there was a bunch of construction in front of their place for like,
yeah, they'll move you around. They'll be like, hey, we'll give you more square footage over here because we're going to go do some over here.
And they stuck them with a new coffee shop as well, Dueling Rabbits, I believe.
There's a new coffee shop on? Yeah.
Apparently it's good.
But again, is it a BPG coffee shop?
That I don't know.
I don't think so.
But there's so many good, like, non-BPG. Like, that is a big renaissance we have had since the pandemic, is like there's so many good little coffee shops now across
Agreed.
The city.
Yeah, that's a welcome change.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's like lots of things to love about
the city. I think since the pandemic, you got Sleeping Bird, Troisième, Scout,
mm-hmm.
Hell's Bells, I think Fair, yeah. and Beanhead is another new one. So we got like six or seven since the pandemic. Like that's the type of thing, though. Like it's a little, I don't know about Dueling Rabbit specifically, just because of being on Market Street, you automatically get a little bit suspicious.
Right.
Kind of same thing with Fair. The vibe is a little bit like that. But otherwise, it was like places that actually generally popped up organically. Like with Scout, it's owned by someone who lives right around there.
Right.
Like that's the way that cities actually develop.
But if BPG was planning to have built a coffee shop on Baynard Boulevard, they would have put the kibosh on any of those shops you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The city would just be like, nah, we can't issue the permit today. Sorry. Because that's how much power they wield. You guys know that the Delaware College of Art and Design has folded, unfortunately. Yes. Sadly, you can imagine who's purchased that beautiful building.
Can you
imagine who's gutting it this month? Puccini Pollen Group. And I just
are they doing something with the facade? Because like you said, it's always like, yeah, they just have the facade. Because, I mean, the building is such a cool, again, it's like an Art Deco sort of building.
Beautiful marble inside.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, like, what do you think they'll rename it? Like,
it'll be another one
on the palette.
List.
Or like.
It'll be like, the palette.
I don't know.
I want.
it'll be so something good. Fucking corny.
It'll be so bad.
But yeah.
Easel.
Yeah, so there's not cool, authentic things like that, and I think it's going to be perceived as a general failure once it's all over, and then they'll resent the city even more because it failed them and their investors is sort of how I see it playing out. My optimism for the city that I grew up in and really like today is really fading.
I hate it.
Yeah,
because again, my grandmother grew up like 8 blocks from here in the fucking 20s. And I want it to be cool. But they're making it fucking dumb. And you don't have to do that. It's not like, oh, this is the only option we have. Well, it's the only option you have to make sure that, like, that Mike Przycki can redo the property that's his neighbor. Or that, like, BPG can open basically a boutique satellite of ShopRite. It's a ShopRite boutique satellite. So it's like a Chris Kenny. Is that his name? Chris Kenny?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm so fucked up. I almost thought I was said the wrong name. So he's partnered with Puccini Pollen Group to open up like this boutique happy horse shit fucking Herbie.
Yeah. Pretty Eddie's.
Pretty Eddie's.
Ostensibly a competitor.
But it's not. It's not. Just a thing. It's just fake. It's a Potemkin fucking grocery store. You know? It's just like, yeah, I don't like it either. I grew up here too,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I grew up in Little Italy, but I grew up going to different places in Wilmington. Even going over to like the Triangle and Sally's,
yeah.
you know, with 18th and Van Buren. There used to be semi-pro baseball in Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
They used to play semi-pro. I saw Tug McGraw pitch at 18th and Van Buren over by the Warner, mm-hmm. over there,
yeah.
by for Canada Dry, I think. This city used to be cool. It doesn't have to be this. It doesn't have to, just because John Carney is a fucking doofus, doesn't mean the city has to be for doofuses.
No. You used to be able to go to DiNardo's and eat crabs with your dad basically in the dark. And
he'd be able to give you...
Everett's not going to be able to experience
16,
that.
You're 15 or 16, your dad can give you like an 8-ounce yeah. beer. Just because you're like, look, eat this crab, drink this 8-ounce beer, we're going to watch a semi-pro baseball game where John Walkenfuss and fucking, you know, and Tug McGraw are going to play. Carl, you missed it, man. This city was really fucking cool.
Yeah, I moved here in 2012.
I'm talking about shit that happened about 1984.
Yeah. That's fine. I mean, I spent plenty of time around before 2012. But yeah, I mean, the one thing that gives me a bit of hope is that they do genuinely seem to be unaware that anything outside of a 5-block radius of Market Street exists.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking at the BPG property map just to be sure about that. I mean, they have some things in other, like one or two in other parts of the city and parts of the state, but I think something like 90, 95% of their properties are along Market Street or Riverfront or in what will soon be Riverfront East. Like, they're very focused on what they want to do. And it sucks because that is Wilmington's commercial corridor, because I live a lot closer to Union Street now. It doesn't quite do it for me, I gotta be honest. North Market, not quite there yet. Maybe one day. So, you know, that part of it sucks. But, you know, if you go to Union Street still, for example, like, there are still plenty of locally owned small businesses. Yeah, like
the original El Toro.
Original El Toro.
Yeah. I mean, and even, I have to say, one of the things that I do love is that the block that El Toro is on is the same block that, like, Peter Pops is on, the old Papa's Market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very famous Little Italy block from 100 years ago. That family, the Mexicano family that owns, like, El Toro and stuff, basically owns a lot of that block, which is also the block that the Crimson Moon, the gay nightclub in Wilmington, is on. Again, I'm just so proud that there's a Mexican butcher or something that owns Peter Pops.
Mm-hmm.
So I can literally get the same hot sausage that my grandmother got from the fucking same place, because Mexican immigrants bought that place and they do the same shit. So there is
it's like one-stop shopping. Yeah. Well, no, I'm being.
But that's not and also that's not going to be available at the Market Street location.
There's not a lampshade store on Market Street like Union Street.
That almost burnt the place down. So, I do have. I feel like we can probably do like 15 minutes of patrons only, but this is enough for you this week. Please consider looking at these t-shirts. And by that, I mean supporting the work we're doing at The Call for NoCap and stuff. It's actually going to be pretty good. Trust me. But yeah. Also, you could also sign up as a patron to the podcast, and then you would hear what we're going to say just now. So, left is best.